Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, Tommy, I've got a question for you.
What's your question?
Where are all the promised electric cars?
They are here in a big way, Dad.
So today we're going to be talking about basically the fact that, Europe has now gone all electric and we're only at 2% in terms of all of our cars electric. So we're going to be going over the electric cars that are here, the ones that are coming. But before we do that, Tommy, right after the intro, I think we should talk about the latest Tesla news because Tesla just dropped some big news.
That's coming up right now.
Congratulations. You have now tuned into TFL Talk, where we discuss everything automotive, whether it's cars or trucks. This is the one place where you can be sure to get independent and honest reviews. Let's get back to the show right now. All right. Let's talk about the breaking news first. Tommy, did you know that there's a new, well, it's not really new, is it? It's refreshed. It's a refreshed Model S and Model X, and of course, a new plaid version of the Model S.
Apparently, it's got over 1,000 horsepower.
0 to 60 in under 2 seconds? Is that even possible? Don't you need rockets or something for that?
Yeah, I mean, it's incredible to think about. The current Model S does it in like 2.4, I think, 2.3. Yeah. And now they're saying sub 2 seconds on a factory road-going electric car. I mean, how is this even going to be legal? How is this going to be possible?
This is, of course, the long-promised and long-awaited Tesla Model S plaid, right? We saw it running around the Nürburgring, I don't know, like a year ago now, right? And on a financial call, Mr. Musk dropped some news, and then, of course, included pictures. So let's talk about, let's start with the big news, which isn't really the outside, right? The outside looks about the same. Both the X and the S look a little bit refreshed, right? The way automakers work is they usually completely bring out a new car every 4 years, and then 2 years into that product cycle, they give it new turn signals or headlights or something. And so it's a mild refresh from the front, but oh my gosh, what about the inside?
Well, the inside looks like a Norwegian tiki bar.
What's a Norwegian tiki bar?
It's the new Model S and Model X. So basically, they took the minimalism thing.
Yeah.
And now you're basically going to be driving an Apple store. So it's super, super minimalist. They got rid of, apparently,
the steering wheel.
No, it still has that.
No,
well,
the steering, but not wheel.
It's got half of a steering wheel. It's more of a
yoke, like an airplane.
Geez, I don't even know what to describe it. Steering square, rectangle.
It's like a yoke on an airplane.
Yeah, I guess
yeah,
so.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good way of looking at it. It's bizarre. It truly is. If you're watching on YouTube, you can kind of see what we're talking about. But it looks like something out of an F1 car. Basically, it's a perfect little rectangle, flat top, flat bottom.
With tool handles on the side.
Yeah, and then it's got a couple buttons on the side.
Yeah.
And then they got rid of, for some reason, the shifter,
yeah,
the drive selector,
yeah,
and the turn signal stocks.
Yeah, so instead of turn signals, what you have are two little buttons on the left side of the steering yoke.
Square.
that you push, right, to go left, to go right. And then instead of the little gear selector, which actually comes out of a Mercedes, you know that, right? The current ones are like Mercedes switch gear.
On the Model S and the X, I don't know, an old C-Class.
Yeah, and now it's in that huge infotainment screen, so it's now digital. And I was reading a story on Jalopnik, and they said that actually it's not illegal, because nobody actually thought anybody would ever do it, to make a gear selector switch electronic in terms of actually putting it into a screen. Not the kind that are already out there.
So did you read how it's going to work, though?
How? The car's going
to
guess.
Right. So apparently you're not going to need to select drive or reverse.
Yeah.
The car will use its sensors and its GPS data to understand that if you're parked in a parking lot with a car in front of you and a car on both sides, you're probably going to want reverse, and it will automatically engage reverse, And then it will, I guess, know when you're done reversing, and it will put you in drive.
I can't wait to test that, Tommy. I cannot wait to test that.
Sounds like a nightmare.
I don't know if we're going to have to get blow-up cars or something, because if it gets it wrong.
Do you remember the Audi 5000 debacle with the unintended acceleration where old folks were
hitting the accelerator instead of the gas pedal?
Yeah, they were hitting the gas instead of the brake.
Right.
And then they were launching themselves through the garage doors.
Yeah.
This is going to be that times a million is what it sounds like it's going to be. And basically, Audi just, I don't know, they put the pedals too close together or something.
So what he's talking about is when I was a young man, 60 Minutes, and you're right, I'm sorry, it's accelerator versus a brake. What they did was they did an expose where all these people were like flying through the back of their garage into their pool. Apparently, potentially the cause of that was that the accelerator and the brake pedal were too close. And so when people thought they were hitting the brake, they instead floored the car, and with Quattro, like the 5000, went right through the garage and into the pool. So it was a quick way to get into the pool.
I think that it's been so long since I've read the reports, but I thought that people thought they were hitting the brake and the brake was causing it to go. I mean, it was just a bizarre story. But anyways, it was this big deal in the 80s or 90s, right?
Yeah, so the Plaid hopefully will – let's talk about this news because it is big, right? So the Plaid is supposedly coming out at the end of the year, right? So we're not today going to be able to buy it. But, you know, I guess that this is in part due to what the Air is bringing to the table.
The Lucid.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Lucid, if you are kind of unfamiliar, there's this little company called Lucid, which has this insane new sedan that's coming to market soon. They're built, I think, in Arizona?
Casa del Grande, I think.
Yeah, like outside of Scottsdale or something.
Yeah, they have outside of Phoenix, right? They have their own factory. And it's a bunch of like ex-Tesla engineers who got together and built the ultimate electric car. They're actually opening, they're calling them studios, Tommy.
Yeah, but
the news was that they just opened up another studio. I think there's six of them now in Miami just north of Miami. What's that really, like, let's see, West Palm Beach.
I have no idea. I'm not really plugged into the chic Miami world. But the cool thing about Lucid is, unlike so many other electric startups that are basically sketches and computers.
They have a factory?
Yeah, Lucid's got a factory. It's got a team. It's got these stores.
Studios.
Stores that they're opening up. No,
they're calling them studios.
Yeah, they're stores. You go to the Walmart studio when you need to go buy some eggs.
Anyway, there are studios.
It's a car. It's not a piece of art. I'm going to call it a store. That's what I'm going with.
Anyway, they're there, and they're very expensive. I want to say that they started about, well, they're like Taycan pricing, right? They started about 120, I think. And then the limited edition, I think, after federal rebates, is like $163,000, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, if you go on their website,
yeah,
they say they start at $69,900.
Yeah, but those aren't available right now.
That's right. They're only taking the big ones.
Yeah.
But here's the deal. I mean, it's an impressive vehicle. 1,080 horsepower. It looks like available early 22 for the Pure.
Yeah.
Late 21 for the Touring.
Yep.
Summer 2021 for the Grand Touring, and then the Dream Edition is coming spring 2021,
yeah,
which is now.
That's the one. That's $160,000.
Yeah.
That's the one that will do a quarter mile in, like, I want to say 9 seconds.
503 miles of projected range, 1,080 horsepower, $161,500 starting.
I want to say Tesla said that the new long-range Model S is going to go $530,000.
Jeez,
yeah,
that's too far.
That's pretty far, yeah.
I can guarantee by the time you're driving 500 miles in your Tesla, you're going to need to stop and take a pee. So might as well charge up in that time you're taking a pee. So let's talk about what Tesla's claiming the Model S Plaid will do.
Yeah.
520 miles of range on a charge. Mm. 0 to 60 times are less than 1.99 seconds, though the company fails to specifically quote the exact time. This is on our website, tflcar.com. So Tesla says the Plaid will be available in, drumroll please,
end of the year.
March.
March?
Yeah.
Now?
Yeah, well, the Plaid Plus
will
make its way to customers later this year. So they're doing two. They're doing Plaid and Plaid Plus, it looks like.
Wow.
There's also a Model X Plaid. So the X is the crossover SUV. And that one is supposed to also be an insanely fast vehicle for the super wealthy.
Yeah, you know, You may find me here kind of not getting all that excited about the Lucid Air, the Tesla Plaid. I mean, these are phenomenal, crazy fast electric cars. But, you know, what happened to, like, electric vehicles for the rest of us, right? The ones that are, you know, selling like hotcakes in Norway, in Germany, you know, where are all those vehicles? And that's really what I wanted to talk about. So let me kind of take a step back. Let me take you back in time, Tommy. Back to, I think it was 2010, Detroit Auto Show. Our economy had just melted down. Ford had, mortgaged their brand to the tune of $25 billion to rescue themselves. The government stepped in and rescued both Chrysler at the time and GM with massive loans. And I was at the Detroit Auto Show, and it was an interesting place because I think that was the first auto show, first like significant auto show that Tesla went to. And in the stand, a lot of companies weren't there. There were a lot of Chinese brands from Kota.
I do remember Kota.
Yeah, they were there. Yeah,
okay.
They didn't go that, you know, they were building an electric car. A lot of Chinese brands in the basement. And then there was Tesla, the shining beacon, right? And they had three cars at the time. Can you guess what those three were?
Two Roadsters and a prototype Model S.
They had a Roadster, a Model S, and a prototype Model X.
I don't think the prototype X came
out. It was there.
I don't think it came out till 2012, if I remember right.
I think it was at that show. I think the prototype was there at the show.
I'll look it up to be sure.
Maybe it was later in the year. Anyway, I think that was one of the last shows that Tesla did. They stopped going to auto shows. Of course, Mr. Musk came up and did his keynote speech. We were there. All the reporters were there. And, of course, he laid out his vision for electric cars, right? And his vision at that time was you will have a house with solar panels on it, and that will feed into a battery that will then charge up your vehicle. And so there will be literally zero emissions, which I guess are the kind of dreams that people who have just sold PayPal for over $1 billion can have, right? You know, most of us probably dream of like going home and watching the next episode of 90 Day Fiancé.
Okay.
Right? He's dreaming about changing the entire infrastructure of the way people power their homes and their cars.
Right.
Right? That's, you know, probably not something that we can do. At that time, most of the journalists and most of the people who were there were looking at Tesla like this is a company that may or may not survive. The domestic companies were, you know, just trying to keep their factories open and not trying to go out of business. Fast forward 10 years later, and now, you know, we're at a point when Tesla's getting ready to sell a car that will go 0 to 60 in under 2 seconds, which is crazy to me.
Pretty amazing.
And it's valued more than the next 7 automotive companies combined.
So.
And they had a profit, actually, this year.
We are.
Annual profit.
We are pretty much at the place where Tesla is doing pretty well. So in 2020, I'm looking at the CNBC report.
Yeah.
They sold 499. They delivered technically 499,550 vehicles. You know, almost 500,000. That's a lot of cars. So I think Elon is
less than Ford sells F-150s.
Yeah, but this is a company that's been around for less than 2 decades, and
right.
They're selling 500,000 cars.
Is that
a year.
Worldwide or America?
I don't know. I think that might be.
I think that might be worldwide.
Worldwide. Yeah, but that's still pretty amazing. 500,000 cars out of the...
Yeah. I mean, the crazy part there is that it's valued at more than like the next 7 car companies combined.
Well, let's compare it to the other company that was at that show, Kota.
Yeah.
Kota sold 191 cars.
And there's one for sale here in Boulder, by the way.
Yeah. Well, one of my favorite YouTube channels just bought one, actually.
Yeah?
They sold 191 cars, which is not that many. So, 500,000 cars is not an inconsiderable amount of vehicles that have been produced. And when you combine that and think that, Nissan has sold, I think, over 500,000 Leafs.
Yeah, it used to be the most popular electric car in the world because, of course, at that time, I was going to say, the only other electric car company that was there was Nissan with their Leaf.
Yeah.
And I think the Model 3 has surpassed the Leaf in terms of combined sales worldwide.
So here's a story in Automotive World.
Yep.
As of December 3rd, 2020, Nissan has sold over 500,000 Leafs worldwide.
Right.
So that's a lot of cars.
Yeah, I mean, look, annually in America, we were up to, 16 million back in 2010, and then that year it dropped to, basically 10 million, and we've kind of struggled our way back up to about 17 million cars. They call them units in the business, right? And so 500,000 units worldwide, when in America alone you're selling 17 million. And by the way, China has surpassed America, I think, for in terms of total number of units. I think I want to say they sold 26 million units in China last year, which is pretty staggering, 26 million cars.
Ton.
What?
That's a ton of cars.
That's a ton of cars. Yeah, so 500,000 is pretty small. But let's kind of talk about, like I said at the beginning of the show, the cars, the electric cars that you can buy. And then I want to ask you, Tommy, why do you think that America is only at 2% adoption, whereas, you know, Europe is at, like, places like Norway are like 70%, like 7 out of 10 cars sold now are electric cars. What's going on? I think the reason is, you know, we were promised back then, at least I felt like I was promised, that electric cars were coming, and 10 years later, now 11 years later, we're just starting to get to the point when there are actually some that are out there. So let's kind of talk about the ones that are out there and the magic that isn't in those cars.
Well, I think we need to talk about the percentage of them. So in the U.S., it's right around 2%
yep.
of cars sold.
Yep.
I'm here on the Wikipedia page, and the percentage of EVs, of plug-in vehicles in Norway, has surpassed 15%. So it's pretty small still.
No, I think it's more than that.
I'm reading
right now.
So
that might be the total, but in terms of sales, I want to say 7 out of 10 cars now and today sold in Norway are either electric or plug-in. So that may be total percentage of cars, right, given all the cars that are there. But in Norway, most cars now sold are electric.
Okay. That's interesting. That's kind of something I didn't know. But I think that in the U.S., there's not really been the incentive for people to buy electric cars.
I mean, sure, we got huge incentives, $7,500 federal. In Colorado, it was $5,000. So this is as big of an incentive as you can have. In Colorado, Tommy, for the last 10 years, you got, if you qualified, which is a big if, right, because you had to have enough revenue to qualify, you would have gotten a check for, what, $12,500 from the government, a credit for buying an electric car. That I don't know how much more incentive you need than that. It took a $35,000 car and made it a $22,000 car.
The issue is that most of these EVs aren't $35,000. Most of the EVs that people want are $40,000, $45,000, $50,000. And when you take $7,500 off of a $50,000 car, you're still in the mid-40s. And this is for a technology that still is relatively unproven. Okay, so I've got the number from Engadget here.
Yeah.
Across 2020, EVs made up of 54% of all new car sales in Norway, which is pretty good.
Yeah, 1 out of 2.
Yeah, more than half of all cars sold in Norway are now electric.
And that's not even counting hybrids. Those are just pure EVs.
But I would be curious to see how much gases per gallon in Norway compared to the U.S.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I mean, you know, the cost of gas in Europe is much higher because in Europe, of course, you know, gas is taxed much more heavily than ours, right? I want to say more than half the price of gas in Europe isn't the cost per barrel. It's actually a tax on top of it.
Right, which is okay. So according to globalpetrolprices.com, in Norway, price per gallon is $7.13.
Yeah.
Versus here in the U.S., which is $2. And that's before you account for road tax and stuff.
Yeah, so but the road tax is a small percentage.
So I'm thinking that that leads a lot of it. I mean, and we saw that, you know, when gas got expensive 10 years ago, when gas started getting to $4 and $5, hybrid became really sought after. I remember reading stories about folks that were searching for old Geo Metros because Geo Metros were more efficient than what they were currently driving.
Yeah, but the thing in Europe is gas prices have always been high in Europe, right? Here in America, our gas prices tend to follow the market, right, the cost per barrel more than they do in Europe. But because there's so much tax in Europe, they've always been – I've been going to Europe for I was born there, but I've been going there pretty annually for a long time, and gas has never been inexpensive. It doesn't fluctuate as much as it does here.
So the other thing we need to keep in mind, though, is even though Norway is doing very well,
yeah,
if you look at
Try Germany. I want to say
– I've got it right here, actually, yeah. In Forbes. So if you – this is a recent article in Forbes and this is where things get interesting. Even without ID3, plug-ins now account for 7.9% of all German passenger car production.
That's plug-ins.
That's 7.9. So
that's production. How about sales?
That's
a whole different number.
Don't you think production and sales would go hand in hand?
No, that's a whole different number.
Okay.
I want to say that hybrids Toward the end of the year in Germany accounted for something like 28%, if I remember reading that.
A total of 108,000 plug-in electric cars were sold in Germany in 2019, consisting of 45,000 plug-in hybrids and 63,000 all-electrics. The plug-in segment market share achieved a record 3.1% of new car sales in 2019, with all-electric cars representing 1.8% and plug-in hybrids 1.3%.
But that's 2019. I'm curious about 2020. Mm-hmm. It's jumped exponentially since then. You're 1 year behind. So we should have last year's numbers, not 2 years' numbers.
So this is on Automotive News Europe.
Yeah. Anyway.
Electrified vehicles with full or partial electric propulsion received a market share of 22% in the fourth quarter of 2020.
Yep. So it's exponentially growing.
But that's also plug-in hybrids.
Yeah, but still.
Which is like 330Es and that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's exponentially growing. But I want to talk about not what's happening in Europe. I mean, we'll leave that to you Europeans. I want to talk about what's happening here where it's only 2%, right? And I think the best way we can talk about that is the fact that in America, the automakers have not, I wouldn't even say doubled down, have not even singled down on electric cars, right? The electric cars that they built were either California compliance cars, right, which were cars that they had to build and California made them build. And they were by no means what I would call very interesting, very fun, or very long-ranged. And the biggest difference, I think, Tommy, between Europe and America is in Europe you can get away with, you know, cars that don't have as much range. Like right now they're selling the Honda e in Europe, which is 120 miles. They won't sell it here. Here in America, we have much further distances. And so if a car has, you know, 100 miles or 160 kilometers, it's barely enough of range electric, if it's all electric.
I mean, I think it depends on the person. I think in the U.S., most electric cars are sold in densely populated areas. And I would argue that most folks in densely populated areas don't drive more than 100 miles.
That's the argument Nissan made when they first came out with the Leaf that had
And they sold 500,000 of them.
When they first came out with the Leaf that had like 65 miles of range, and it was pretty much a dismal flop for them.
So my question is, what comes first, the chicken or the egg? If you are the Ford Motor Company, you are selling over 400,000 F-150s every year.
Over 600,000.
Is it over 600?
Yeah.
Okay, well over half a million.
F-Series.
F-Series, yeah,
right.
Which is incredible.
Yeah.
And you see that Americans are only buying 2% of new cars that are electric.
So
would you spend the hundreds of millions to develop a ground-up EV, or would you be incentivized to keep improving the F-Series?
So first of all, what Ford did was they built a pretty crappy EV, the Focus EV, if you remember.
Right.
Which was pretty
it was a compliance car.
Yeah, it was a pretty poor attempt at it. And so they kind of stuck their toe in the electric car world and said, it's not very warm, so let's keep building trucks. But I would argue that what they should have done is they should have looked at what was happening with Tesla and seeing – forget sales, right? The sales at that time weren't very strong, right? You could say Tesla's this company that's for rich people. And this is – I'm going once again back in time, like 2011, 12, right?
I think most people think that Teslas are still for rich people.
Well, I mean, Model 3s now are becoming, you know, $35,000, $40,000 cars.
Yeah, but a lot of them you see are still 50. I mean, they're still above the average transaction price.
But we didn't have a Model 3 in 2012. We had
Model S.
$120,000 Model S and $127,000 Model X, right? And they thought to themselves, this is a world that's stratified. It's not in our you know, buying demographic. But the amount of like buzz and excitement around Tesla should have been a clue that this is where the wind is blowing from, right? I used to go to a thing at Ford every year where they were predicting the future. They get a futurist who would look at all the trends, and somehow I think they missed this trend. Well, maybe they missed it less than the other car companies because now they've got the Mach-E. But back then they certainly missed it. Anyway, what I'd like to do, dude, is I'd like to kind of go through the different cars. I want to make this car specific and talk about, and I hope after we do this, people will understand what my point is. Talk about the cars that you can buy today.
Right.
Right now on the market that you can buy that are all electric.
So let's start with Ford.
Yes.
Because that's an interesting one.
Mach-E.
I would argue the Mustang Mach-E is exactly the car you just described. Because I was at the launch of the Mach-E, I got to spend time with the engineers and the designers. This car is not months in the making. This car is years in the making. The Mustang Mach-E wasn't thought of last year. It wasn't thought of 2 years ago. This is a car that is They had to predict the future several years ago. And what Ford did initially, and they talked about this on the presentation, is they came up with a compliance car. And they showed us a picture of it. It kind of looks like an egg.
Right.
And the team wasn't excited about it. No one in the engineering department was really that excited about it because it was just another relatively mundane EV. And then at some point, someone said, guys, this is the future. We're going to build this Mustang crossover that's got excitement, that's got soul.
Yeah.
And that's what they did. So I think Ford – I mean I'm totally contradicting what I said earlier, but Ford did a good job of predicting –
I mean, I was there at the auto show when they introduced it.
Right.
Right. And that was, I want to say, like 5 years ago now. And basically all they did was they had this – maybe six, 4 years ago, they had this really – boring presentation at the Detroit Auto Show, which, by the way, is the biggest, was for the domestic car manufacturers, the biggest auto show of the year. It was kind of like a TED Talk gone rogue. And then at the very end of it, they put up a logo that says Mustang Mach-E coming soon.
Yeah.
Right? That was it. So like they didn't have a lot at the time to talk about. But, you know, I think the Mach-E will be an interesting litmus test. Because it is finally the first car that is affordable, that meets, you know, the things that everybody wants out of an electric car, which is range and performance and uniqueness and utility. And we'll see if it sells. I think that's the first one of the new breed that actually directly competes with Tesla that is available today.
Right. They're delivering the orders now. But you're going to be able to go in and buy one very shortly.
Right.
Yeah. I think the Mustang Mach-E, it will be a good litmus test. I think Ford has dumped a huge number of resources in it and took a big, big gamble on, once again, a technology that's only 2% of the total market in the U.S. But I hope it pays off for them.
But the problem is these cars we're talking about weren't available a year ago, whereas they should have been, I think. So let's talk about like the cars that were available a year ago before we talk about the cars that are available now. So, you know, GM, I was there when GM rolled out the Bolt. And once again, my jaw dropped to the ground because I knew that people who wanted electric cars wanted something that was like the Jetsons car, the future. And instead, this little tiny, from an American standpoint, basically commuter car, right? An economy car, you would have called it, rolls out. And that is GM's, you know, car of the future. And I thought to myself, why is it front-wheel drive? Why doesn't it have a frunk? Why doesn't it take advantage of all the engineering that an electric car can have? And the one thing that it did have going for it, or it still does, is it, of course, had, you know, range. I think it came out of the box with like 240 miles, which was the first non-California compliance car that actually, but it was just such a, like a mundane, you know, nothing exciting about it. Didn't accelerate very quickly. You know, my heart didn't pound when I saw it. And I thought to myself, this is the future, GM. Build the future electric car. Don't build an economy car that happens to be electric. And so I think that therein lies the rub with the Bolt.
I agree.
And this is a company that was in the forefront of not only battery tech, but also of electric car tech.
But I'd like to reemphasize, too, I mean, we're making it sound like EVs are commonplace. And I still don't think they are. At least here in the States, there's still like some – for most people, they're like a niche science experiment. I don't think most people watching, and the data proves it, 98% of you don't go out and buy EVs. You have the option to. I mean, if you bought more Bolts, they would make more Bolts. But I don't think that it's in the mainstream yet. I still think we're way beyond that.
So with the next company, we don't even have to take a year back. We can talk about today, right? And that is FCA, which is now Stellantis, right?
Right.
Has no electric cars.
Sure.
None. Zero.
Well, they've got the plug-in hybrid Pacifica.
And they've got a 4xe Jeep coming. That's it.
Yep.
You know, and this is one of the three major domestic car companies that has no electric cars. Of course, Peugeot, that they just partnered with, has a bunch of them, so maybe they'll be coming on those platforms, but they don't have anything.
And the other thing, too, that's going to push them toward this are the credits. You know, they have to buy their fuel economy credits.
From Tesla.
Buy them from Tesla, which, you know, boosts Tesla's profits.
All right, so there are the three domestics. You know, Ford has a Mach-E. GM has the Bolt. I mean, I know that the EV commerce coming, but it's not here yet.
Apparently, get this. I was listening to another podcast the other day. I guess GM has 9 all EVs coming out in the next couple of years from Cadillac, from Chevrolet. We've got not only the GMC, but also a more affordable Silverado pickup truck. We've got, it looks to be an electric Corvette coming.
Or electrified, for sure.
An electrified Corvette SUV. By the way, did you see that? If you looked at that presentation a while back, people think that's going to be a Corvette SUV.
The other thing I saw is that, getting back to Tesla, it looks like the Cybertruck is going to be delayed. On that conference call, I think, or maybe in Twitter, it's hard to tell now with Mr. Musk, I think he stated that, you know, they'll might have a few pre-production Cybertrucks running around at the end of this year, but any orders won't be built or delivered until 2022. So we're quite a ways, again, another year at least, from actually having like a Cybertruck you can go and actually drive. But that means that potentially the Hummer EV is going to be out first before the Cybertruck. Because they're auctioning one at Bear Jackson's, you know.
Very soon.
Very soon, in March.
That thing's coming up quick.
Yeah, anyway, so let's talk about some of the other manufacturers. Toyota.
Toyota has nothing.
Exactly.
At least that we've heard of.
The closest you get is the RAV4 Prime. And people are scrambling to get one. They love it.
Yes. Toyota's all in on their hybrids right now, and I think they're going to be pushing that direction for quite some time, which I think from their standpoint makes sense because they're looking at the numbers. They see the number of hybrids they're selling. They see the numbers of EVs being sold, and they're like, look, this is familiar. We know how to do this. We've been doing this for 23 years.
The closest they're getting to an EV is a hydrogen car, the Mirai, the new one, and the Lexus version of it. And they're sending us one, by the way.
So we
should have one next month to actually test. So that's going to be fun because we don't have any place to fill it up with hydrogen, but they're sending us a full one, and we'll return it empty all the way to California. So that is electric, right? That is an electric car.
More or less.
With a small battery.
All right, next up, let's talk about the Korean manufacturers.
Now, those are interesting because the Koreans, and I'm talking about Hyundai and Kia, sister brother companies, they actually have electric cars that do directly compete now.
Yeah, they do. So they've got the Kia Niro EV,
yep.
Great car, and the Hyundai Kona EV,
yes.
Another great car. And then you also have, I think they still make the Ioniq EV, although I'm not super sure.
Ioniq's going to bust off its own range of all-electric cars.
And this is where it gets really exciting, because there's going to be an all-new platform, which is supposed to be really cool.
Yeah, but the thing, once again, I would say about the Ioniq and the Kona, the two you can go buy today.
Niro,
the Niro and the Kona EVs, are that they are, once again, following GM with the Bolt. These are cars that do not have, unique platforms. They're shared platforms, and they're economy cars, what used to be called economy cars, that happen to be electric. So there's nothing inherently groundbreaking or unique, except for the fact that they're powered by electricity versus, gasoline.
They are fairly affordable.
Yeah,
so
fairly.
Kona starts at 37, but they have full federal tax credit, so you could potentially get one for about 30.
But that's not the Jetsons car. That's not what I picture myself driving when I'm driving in the future.
Look, I don't think a lot of people want to drive the Jetsons car.
I think they do, actually. I think that's the secret sauce for Tesla, right? They give you futuristic design, interior and exterior, and they give you incredible performance. That's future.
But I think that the 500,000 people that bought them last year want that. Absolutely. But someone like my mom, she doesn't understand how to use the Tesla. We've put her in it like four times, and she's totally baffled by it. I think a lot of people just want
– You're talking about our Model Y.
Our Model Y. Most people just want a normal car to drive around in that happens to be quiet and fast and efficient. And I think that's going to be coming soon here. And the Kona is not a bad option if you want a more standard driving experience.
Look, if you want a normal car to drive around in, right, then there are much better choices than an electric car because they have today, an inherent problem, and that is the charging network. Unless you're a Tesla owner and you have the supercharging network, most electric cars companies, have to depend on Electrify America. So if the network charging and all the other stuff, the fact that you lose range in the winter, the fact that they charge at different rates, there's just so much more to do with electric cars that is fussy than just gas cars.
The funny thing is, though, is I hear all these arguments, and I used to be very opposed to electric cars five years ago. And then we got that little smart car, which is 60 miles of range, doesn't even fast charge. And even in our city, which is not huge, it's about 100,000 people, I not once felt range anxiety. I not once needed to travel in that car long distance because I had another vehicle to drive. I just charged it up at night, started the morning with the full quote-unquote tank, drove it all day, plugged it back home, and it was good. I mean, that's how 95% of people are going to drive their cars 95% of the time.
So let's take the two competing cars. Take a Corolla, right, which is just traditional Toyota. And compare it, or even a Corolla hybrid, right?
Right.
And compare it to Kona electric, right?
Sure.
The Kona electric is going to be more expensive,
Yes.
even with the discount.
Yes.
It's going to be more expensive. It's going to be more limited in range. You'll have a much harder time driving it across country.
How often do you drive your Corolla across country? This is what most regular
I think car buyers will look at. So it's going to be more expensive. It's going to have an issue going across country. It's also going to have an issue with charging. There's all this fussiness associated with charging that you may or may not know. Most buyers are just going to be, I'd buy the Corolla, unless there's something like really cool or crazy fun about this that you know, gives you a reason to buy to put up with all that stuff. And that's what Tesla did. They said, yeah, it's going to be problematic, but we've got our own charging network, so we're going to take that worry away from you. And it's going to be crazy quick, so at the stoplight, you'll be, you know, and it's going to be very dependable because electric cars are very dependable, and it's going to be cool and different, and it's going to have a cachet to it. The Kona Electric doesn't have any of that.
I understand that, but at the same time, you have to take
the hard part
with convincing consumers is you have to change the way you view the automobile. You don't drive it like a gasoline car. You don't own it like a gasoline car. You don't drive it and then go to a public station to fill it up. You fill it up at your house if you have access to
overnight.
A house. Overnight. Yeah, and you wake up and there's a full charge. The best thing that folks can do, in my opinion, is if you have a house and you have space for two cars, go buy yourself a used i3 and a $3,000 Chevrolet Silverado. That drive your i3 98% of the time, and then when you go ahead and take the road trip, jump in the Chevy.
Right,
and
but
use dyno juice.
Let's say you don't have that luxury of having two vehicles, or let's say you're a single vehicle family, which is rare in America. I'll give you that, right?
Right, because the average American household, I was listening to this too, has 2.4 cars.
And you have an electric car. And you show up at home, and the thing is empty, and then you got to go to the grocery store. You're not going to charge it up enough from your, you know, level 2 home charger to the grocery store. You're going to have to wait.
But if you are an average American, then you have 2.4 cars. First of all, I would argue that even most electric cars, if you're doing a normal commute, you would arrive
if you're
home.
American family, not
yeah.
American.
American household, I think it was.
Yeah,
has 2.4 cars.
Yeah, but that's not.
But that combines the whole U.S.
Right.
I mean, it could be families of 2, it could be families of 6,
right.
An average of 2.4 cars. So an electric car makes perfect sense as a backup car or as a little commuter. I'm not saying you go out and buy one.
And you just put your finger on why only 2% of people in America, 2% of the sales are electric cars, because that's what it is.
Well, that's because so far the current offerings are like $45,000. I'm not going to go buy a $42,000 Chevrolet Volt that's compromised. I mean, we need more affordable electric cars.
Let's keep talking about the electric cars and the companies. Mazda.
Mazda has an MX-30 coming, which is going to have a rotary-powered range extender.
But there's nothing right now.
Currently nothing right now.
Yeah, Mazda has nothing right now.
Okay, let's keep going down the list here. Honda has pretty much nothing. They had the Clarity for a while.
Yeah, which had like 80 miles of range, or 120.
Yep, Nissan had the Leaf.
And the Leaf kind of shot itself in the foot.
The debacle, yes,
yeah,
really
that's
bad.
That's a whole podcast on itself.
And then they've got the Aria
coming,
which is their all electric crossover.
Yeah, but it's not here yet.
Yep. So beyond that, if we
BMW, let's go back to Germans.
BMW was huge in electrification with cars like the i3 and i8, and then they kind of walked away from it. But they still have plug-ins, X3, X5.
They have a lot of plug-ins, but there's an electric car coming.
The bulbous thing.
that's out there.
iX7.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Then there's, is it iX7?
It's iX, depending on, there'll
oh,
be different
okay.
ones.
And then there's Mercedes.
They just introduced the EQA 250 in Europe, which will be available maybe in a year in Europe, but is not available here in America. There will be an AMG version, but get this, EQA right now. 0 to 60, how fast do you think?
It's like 9 seconds.
Exactly.
Really. Although we should forgot one. Yeah. Lexus, which is Toyota, in Europe has an electric UX, which is pretty cool. So there is an electric car in Europe, just not in the States.
Right.
That Toyota builds. Let's keep going down the list. Audi has the e-tron and the e-tron Sportback.
So they're really, if you're serious about electric cars, right, there's like a handful of near or luxury cars that you can buy. So there's a Jaguar I-Pace.
Which is old and very expensive.
Like $70,000 expensive. They just upped the range, I want to say, to close to like 260 maybe. You can look it up. It used to be 240, and they just, I think, added 20 more miles of range to it. But, yeah, it's not selling. I don't know why. That's a whole other podcast. Maybe if you guys are in the comments below. I just think it's probably the right car, wrong brand maybe. The e-tron, I think, is selling 50,000 units in 2020.
It's pretty good.
Worldwide.
Yeah, for a car that has like 220 miles of range, it's pretty good.
My biggest worry is when we were at the Audi dealership, there were a lot of them there that were like used and certified. So I kind of felt like people, there's two things that would be going on, right? People are either buying them or leasing them and then returning them right away. Or They take the credit and then, you know, walk away from it a year later. Like I said, there were a lot of them in the used car lot.
Interesting. Okay.
This was one dealership. Maybe there are not as many in other dealerships. Jaguar, obviously Tesla. And then there's, of course, Audi. We just talked about Porsche, Taycan.
Very good car, but also
they sold 4,000 last year.
But wasn't it like 20 worldwide?
Yeah, 4,000 in the U.S.
Yeah, pretty good for a car that's, you know, launched with like $150,000, $160,000 starting.
And they're coming out. They're coming out with a rear-wheel drive.
The base one, yeah, 82?
79.
Okay.
79.99, so 80,000. So they're coming out with that car soon. That's going to be here.
Yeah, that's more affordable.
But, dude, that is like what? That is 10 cars, maybe. Out of all the models that are sold here, right?
Yeah, it takes I think, to be honest, Dad, I think the manufacturers are doing better than I'd expect. Because if you look at when the first Leaf hit the market, which was 2010,
yeah,
right? In 10 years, it takes a lot of money and a lot of time to develop.
The Leaf looks identical to the one from 10 years ago. If you were to put the new Leaf up with the old Leaf, the biggest difference, of course, would be range. But that's about it.
But the first real mass market EV you could buy, I'm not talking like the EV1 and the RAV4 right. from the 90s, but the first mass market EV you could buy, the Leaf, in 10 years we now have 8 models from these major manufacturers competing for a segment that's just 2%.
Well, I'm saying, which came first, the chicken or the egg? Is it because there's only 8 models? We also have to talk about Volkswagen. So Volkswagen, you know, after Dieselgate has triple down on electrification. But once again, that's another company. I remember being at the Detroit? Maybe it was LA Auto Show. They all get, you know, kind of into one after going to them for 10 years. When the little bus came out, the Buzz?
Yeah, the ID Buzz.
Never. Where is it? Once again, where is the thing?
That these manufacturers can't just snap their fingers and start pulling out EVs out of factories. I mean, it takes time to develop. You got to get the battery infrastructure.
I'm not saying why introduce it like 6 years ago and then 6 years later.
Well, Tesla does.
You could have built an electric. Electric vehicles are very simple, right? It's basically a battery and two motors and then some software to control it. These are not hard vehicles, right? The amount of like moving components in an electric car is nothing compared to what it takes to build an internal combustion engine with like superchargers or electric turbochargers or, you know, name all the stuff that's on it. And yet, once again, you know, there's finally the ID.3 is here and it's selling very well in Europe and we're supposed to get the ID.4. Once again, you know, I would say if the company is committed to selling those cars, you know, we have not seen one.
I think you're discounting how hard it is to develop a ground.
You've made that argument.
You're not sticking double A's into a Beetle and calling it a day.
You've made that argument. I get it. It takes forever to build.
Listen to me. Hang on. Just hold up. The first ones, the early ones, Focus Electric, Fiat 500e. The compliance cars were easy because you take a gasoline car, you throw some batteries in a motor, whatever. You got a car. They're pretty crap. Let's be honest. For most people, they're pretty crap. To build an EV that works, you have to rethink the way you do the platform. The battery has to be integral into the architecture. You can't just take the current Passat and then throw some batteries.
These are car companies with 100 years of building cars.
And in 10 years, we have like EVs.
I would say in 10 years, Tesla has built more and better. And you're going to say I'm a Tesla fanboy.
I'm
not a Tesla fanboy. I'm just looking at this pragmatically and realistically. In 10 years, Tesla has built more and better EVs than all of the car companies combined with their 1,000 years of car building experience. Tesla doesn't build them well. I'll give you that. The software is good, and their electrification is good. The actual building of the cars, they're still learning. You know, they've got problems with that, but still, it's pretty impressive what one dude, you know, with a couple billion from PayPal, has done. And yet the traditional car companies are struggling with that.
It's impressive, but if this was a totally free market, there would be no Tesla. Because Tesla's been around because they've been making millions upon millions in tax credits, which is tax credits as well, but in terms of EV credits, because that's the way our government's set up.
No, why is that? What's the rationale for that?
It's to promote these traditional manufacturers to make EVs.
No, the rationale for that is that global warming, dude.
Right, but my point is that...
Sorry, climate change.
With Tesla...
I mean, there's a reason that the government does this. The government has done this, not just, you know, people make that argument. They say, it's because the government sticks their finger on the scale, and they do, but the government always sticks its finger on the scale in everything, and whether that's for, you know, global warming reasons or because, you know, some politician has, you know, gotten paid off, like happened in, I think it's in Ohio, where basically the electric company got permission to build more nuclear plants because, you know, know, the politicians were paid off. It always happens. So I'm not making a moral argument. I'm just making a realistic argument.
I know, but if this system wasn't set up where other manufacturers had to buy EV credits from Tesla, I strongly believe the company.
But that happens. It's never people say if it was a fair. It's never a fair playing field.
But
life isn't fair. Some people are born with good looks, you know, and they're the Brad Pitts of the world.
And that
makes life easier.
For some reason, Tesla, which sold 500,000 cars last year,
yeah,
is valued more than the Toyota Motor Corporation.
I'm not saying it's worth that.
So I think a lot of that is due to the stock market. A lot of that is due to some crazy investment that Tesla's had. I honestly don't think that Tesla is worth the hype for 90% of the time. They build some great cars, but
look, you think I'm a fanboy. I'm not a fanboy. I'm very realistic and I'm very pragmatic. All I'm saying is that I understand what Tesla has accomplished and what the traditional car companies have failed to do. And there's a reason that, you know, Tesla is very successful. And yeah, there's a lot of different market forces, and you can pull your hair out talking about the fact that they're valued too much. You can pull your hair out talking about the fact that they're not making a profit. You know, there's all this other stuff that you could pull your hair out about. But the actual buzz and the actual product they're delivering is you know, years ahead of what the other car companies can deliver to this point, especially when you take their charging network.
It's,
you know,
the charging network's amazing. It's also worth noting that you're saying these companies are moving slowly. Tesla moves quickly and makes a lot of mistakes, and a lot of the early cars are pretty poor quality. Keep in mind, do you remember how long we were waiting for a Model 3? Do you remember that?
You know, when Edison...
They said, oh, the Model 3 will be here next year.
I agree. But it's never a perfect world. I'm sure when Edison came around,
I'm not saying it's
and
perfect world.
Started his electric company,
Tesla,
a lot of people were electrified.
That Tesla takes a long time to make cars too. It's not like they're just whipping them out.
No. You're making this argument that, you know, like with full self driving, or people are, you know, decapitating themselves. Yes, it's dangerous and it happens. But I'm sure, you know, when Edison came around and said, you know, instead of, you know, using gas in your home to pop, you know, to create light, we're going to put these electric wires. A lot of people probably died of electric. You know, I mean, there is a learning curve, and things are going to get broken.
I agree, but the things that shouldn't be broken The eggs that shouldn't be broken are panels not fitting right. The heater has failed twice now under Model Y. Could you imagine if you bought a car?
It hasn't failed. It's just continued.
It's failed.
It hasn't failed. It's just,
so if
wait, 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 wait. I just want to be very precise. The heater does not work properly. So when you're saying it's failed, it's not like we had it repaired, they fixed it again. It hasn't ever been repaired.
It broke. The heater's not working.
No, but you make it sounds like, if I'm listening to this, like it was repaired and then failed again.
No, I'm not saying it.
It stopped working twice would be a better use of language.
Yes, it's not. It's broken.
There were two instances or three instances when the heater didn't work.
You were not on top of the mountain pass 4 degrees with my mom and the puppy, freezing at 4 degrees with the heater not working.
Yeah.
The semantics don't matter that. My mom is freezing
her butt
off. That's
grand, Tommy, and we've had three Defenders. Three
I know.
Defenders.
That's Land Rover. Land Rover does Land Rover stuff. Everybody knows that Land Rover has some problematic reliability.
Okay. So we've had one Tesla where the heater stopped working three times, or you can compare it to a traditional company where basically we've had
Land
to
Rover's
go through,
not a traditional company.
Where
Land
we had
Rover,
to go through three.
Land Rover is for folks that buy a car and they understand that it's a beautiful vehicle, but it's going to have issues.
All right.
You know, what about the Silverado?
It's not a Toyota.
207,000 miles. Nothing's wrong with it.
Say that they're not great at building cars?
I know that, but you're making a lot of excuses.
I said they're good at software, right? And I said they're good at electrification. I didn't say they're good at building cars.
Yes, but the point is, I think that Tesla is moving quicker than the other manufacturers, but I think at the cost of cutting corners. And
let's keep going. The other thing I would say is, you know, we're really struggling to get electric cars here to test. You know, some of the manufacturers, like Volkswagen, when they had the e-Golf, we requested one and we got it for, I think, 3 months. But now with their more, hopefully, advanced electric car, the ID4, we haven't seen hide nor hair of it, right, to test. And we have got a pretty good big audience. The same thing can be said for Volvo, which has a new EX40 Recharge. You know, I just emailed Volvo and said, hey, we'd love to XC40. We'd love to test this thing. You know, they're selling it. Why can't we get our hands on it? And to me, sometimes that's more of a direct measure of how committed the car companies are to electrification, right? If they really think it's an important car, or truck, right, like Ford with the F-150, they'll get it to us because they know that a lot of people watch us and listen to us. And if they're kind of lukewarm about it, then they're like, oh, it's in Denver. We got to go all the way to Denver. It's not that big of a car for us. So you can tell, I think it's not what they say, it's what they do, right? And like Ford got us a Mach-E, but I'm still waiting for the Polestar.
Well, sure, but we don't know anyone at Polestar.
Yeah, we know.
We have PR contacts.
Yeah, we have PR contacts at Polestar.
Polestar? Not Volvo?
It's its own thing.
The Volvo's kind of a weird thing. I mean, we haven't been able to get an e-tron either here in Denver.
Yeah, I got to go on the program, which is great, so I got to go drive it, but there is no e-tron in the fleet. Neither is there an I-Pace in the fleet. In the Denver fleet, at least, and never has been.
Look at that. I don't think that the manufacturers are incentivized to push the cars if so few of them are being sold. I mean, how many I-Paces did they sell last year?
Once again, chicken or the egg.
Yeah, and I think right now the chicken is winning.
That's
what the market is dictating. And especially right now as gas is cheap. If gas under the new administration shoots up to $8 a gallon, you're going to bet we're going to get an e-tron in the fleet to test.
Yeah, I don't think the administration controls the price of gas.
But I think at $2 a gallon, we're going to keep seeing a lot
of... But that same pricing is in Europe, right?
But Europe is a different thing. You admitted it earlier. Europe has a very different way of buying cars.
Yeah, but it's,
it's very different.
I would say that, advanced, maybe not advanced, but developed countries with their car infrastructure are very similar and are very compatible. I mean, it's not like we're comparing Europe and America to, pick the third world country of your choice.
Europe still buys a lot of station wagons, and no one here in the States buys station wagons. We have very different opinions on cars. An F-150 won't work in Europe. It just won't work on many streets.
A lot of people want F-150s in Europe.
Yeah, but they
don't
sell them. They don't really sell them in Europe.
Right.
But my point is that very different markets, and I don't think they correlate at all. I think what works in Europe is not necessarily going to work here in the U.S. I mean, if pre-days Dieselgate, Europe was selling the hell out of diesels, and here in the States, we weren't.
I would argue that that's absolutely wrong. I think people's taste in vehicles...
So where's my Renault Zoe?
Once again...
If it works in Europe, why wouldn't it work
here? Let me
finish.
I'm not saying it works. I'm saying, there's this belief, and for a long time was it that cars should be different... Ford, a good example, right? So Ford used to build like a different Focus in Europe for the different Focus in America. Same name, different car. Very different car. And then Alan Mulally came along after 2010, right, when the company mortgaged its brand and said, this is stupid. We're going to build one car. They called it one Ford for one, right? And so, he had a team of people in Europe. He had a team of people in Brazil. He had a team of people in North America. And they got together via the internet and they built one car. And I think it worked.
I don't think it did.
I think it worked.
I have proof it didn't work.
I think it worked.
Can you buy a new Focus in Europe?
No, because what happened was
just answer the question. Can you buy a new Ford Focus in Europe?
No, you can't buy one
yes,
here.
Yes, you can. You can't buy one in
here.
The States.
Yeah, I think that's proof it didn't work.
Then.
No, I think what happened was once Alan left, you needed the leadership to be like that far-sighted to understand that the cost savings is worth getting input from different regions and building a car that works everywhere. But instead, once he left, Ford went back to old Ford, which was, we're going to do things the way we've been doing them since Henry Ford was running the company.
I disagree. I completely disagree. They sold 194,000 Fiat 500s in Europe in 2018. 100.
I'm not talking about like little city cars.
That's a whole different thing. That's my argument. Cars that work in Europe don't work here. And cars that work here don't work in Europe.
A8s work in Europe too, and they're massive giant cars.
Yeah, but what about an F-250? There's a reason you don't see a lot of dual wheels. Once again,
don't go to trucks. Don't go to the most extreme example. Why don't we talk about actually apples to apples?
Well, how many Corvettes did they sell in Europe last year?
Well, that's a whole different story.
No,
I think the reason, Tommy, I think the reason that the Corvette doesn't sell in Europe is because Europeans have a bias toward exotic European cars. I watch a lot of the European...
But that just solidifies my point.
Can I finish my sentence? I watch a lot of European, especially British publications. I talk to a lot of people in Europe, and the belief in Europe is that the Corvette is, all brawn and no brain. And I disagree.
Can I make my point? That opinion is the reason the same cars that sell in the U.S. don't sell in Europe. I mean, it's that – it's those biases, it's those wants in Europe that are different from the U.S.
No, they're not. They're not because look, the first company that came to America from Europe was Volkswagen, seriously. And, you know, they weren't selling American cars. They were selling the Beetle. They were selling the Golf, right? And Americans bought them up like crazy. And then the next wave of car companies that came to Europe were the Japanese, and they weren't selling F-150s, right? They weren't selling Tundras or Tacomas. They were selling little tiny Corollas and Hondas, and people bought them like crazy. They bought the same cars that people were buying in Japan here.
In the 1950s and 60s, when we had far fewer cars, just globally, I think that, yeah, there was some parallel because you just didn't have that many options. But there's a reason that we sold, I don't know what it was, 400,000 Mustangs in the first year in 1965, and Ford didn't really bring that into the States.
I don't have perspective for that far back. But I can also tell you that then when, you know, the Germans came here, right, with the Mercedes and the BMW and the Audi, Americans bought them like hotcakes, and they weren't selling American versions, right? They were selling, like, the 2002 was a very popular car in Europe, and it was a very popular car here because the things that made it great in Europe are the things that people wanted here as well.
I just don't think that appeal works nowadays. I mean, there's a reason we didn't get the 1 Series hatchback from BMW. There's a reason that we didn't initially get the 8 Class from BMW.
Right, but now you're at the edges. I'm saying about the main thing. I think in general, right, sure, there will be cars in different segments that work better in different
places.
So why
do we have a different Passat?
I'll tell you what company would sell here really well.
What?
Skoda.
I disagree. Nobody knows what Skoda is. Volkswagen. They make the same cars.
No, because
it's a rebadged Volkswagen.
No, a Skoda is kind of, they've got that kind of brand value and
European
engineering that you know, people would be willing to pay less money for, right? So basically what you're getting is a European engineered car that cost a lot less. So it's kind of like the play that the Koreans made, because Koreans are now moving up, right? When Kia came here and when Hyundai came here, the Elantra was this entry-level car, and they had to give it a 10-year warranty because people were afraid that it wasn't going to make it, you know, down the road from the dealership. And they've kind of worked their way up, and they're building now Genesis and very expensive cars. And there's a big opening, I think, underneath both the Japanese, the Koreans, and the Americans. I think Skoda would fill that void like it does in Europe, and they would do really well here.
I think 90% of people listening to this podcast have probably no idea what that company is.
It's so annoying. Nobody knew what it
was. And it took Kia.
Dude.
How long did it take Kia from the XL to build the
Telluride? It takes a long time.
Like 35 years.
Dude, but nobody, at least, you know, I mean, Hyundai, people didn't even know how to pronounce it.
Of course, Dad. People still don't know
how to
pronounce
Europe, it. Like in Europe, Skoda it just rolls off the tongue because, oh, Skoda, yeah. No worries.
But my point is that these cars don't work. And I have one more example. The Passat in the U.S. is entirely different than the Passat.
Yeah, and I think that's a huge mistake.
I disagree. I think that Americans want
huge
different
mistake.
Things
no,
than
because
Europeans.
That's a great
the
example.
The roads are different. Can I make one more argument? Yeah. The roads are different. In Germany, you have small roads, twisty roads. Here in the U.S., how many turns from here to Phoenix? 4?
Yes, that's why pickups work.
Yeah, we want comfortable cars that are good in a straight line. For the most part, those are what sell. That's why F-150 is really
successful. So here's the problem with the Passat, right? In Passat, and a lot of cars, right? We were in Europe and we rented a Golf, and it was it had better transmission, better headlights, better seats, right? This was the all the little variant Golf, which is the all road. No, what's it called here?
You know, all track.
All track, yeah, the all track here. Anyway, we rented this thing, and I was so surprised at how good it was in Europe, and then we rented it here. It was detuned for America. They made it because America, people are much more price conscious, right? So what they did was they made it cheaper. And I think whenever you treat your customer in two different ways, you say one group of customers, you guys get the best, right? So we're going to give you a Passat with much more sophisticated suspension than the Americans are going to get. Instead, you Americans are big, so we're going to give you more legroom. I think that's a problem. I think people inherently want to be treated the same way. And when you say to one of them, and it happened with the M3 too, right? When the M3 was detuned for America.
This is the classic example of the journalists and the CTSV. All the journalists said, we need more wagons. Bring us a CTSV wagon.
I'm not talking about.
Hang on. In Europe, wagons sell like crazy. They do sell a lot of wagons. Everyone said, bring us a CTSV wagon. They're like, here you go. 500 people brought it. Same thing with the E-Class wagon. There's a reason there's no more 5-series wagon. There's a reason there's no more 3-series wagon. Because Americans stopped buying them. In Europe, you can still buy a 3-series wagon.
I'm not talking about wagons. I was talking about the way that you treat your customers.
But it's a different customer group. Someone that buys a 500, Fiat 500, is not going to buy an F-150. Someone that buys an F-150 is not going to buy a Fiat 500. It's been proven.
When you detune a car.
That's a different thing, though. That's the same car in different tuning. People know that's crap.
The message you're sending to your customer base is you're not good enough to get the best. We're going to sell the best in Europe, but in America, you guys are completely different, so we're just going to sell you, you know, space or simplicity.
But that's when you have the same model across two different markets. I'm talking about how different markets need different models. A Volkswagen Up, I would love to own one. It wouldn't sell in the States. A Volkswagen Amarok, I would love to own one. They can't import it into the States because of the chicken tax.
How about if there was no chicken tax?
Well, then we're going back to the argument about politics and how that comes into the free market.
All right. Well, guys, we just had Blazy fixed, so he will not be passing on his genes, I fear. And, Tommy, you got to go pick him up at the vet.
Yes.
Because the little guy is going to need a lot of care and love. Blaze, of course, is our Bernese Mountain Dog, who now is, still a Bernese Mountain Dog, but...
Ballless. All right. Yeah. Well, check out tflcar.com for what?
News, views, and honest and independent reviews.
All right. See you next time.
Ciao.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.